On today's College Football Inquirer, the Big Ten spent years complaining about the SEC playing only 8 conference games. Now the SEC is going to play 9, and the SEC is complaining about the Big Ten's non-conference scheduling because it always comes back around. Also, Ross has a congressional update, and Ward Manuel, the AD at Michigan, stepping down at the end of the year. What should the next Michigan AD be? We'll talk about it all on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples. I am at SEC Media Days, as you can see by the giant logo behind me. Ross is at SEC Media Days, but he's in his hotel room because he's been on calls with the folks in DC. What's up, Ross?
Yeah, it was. It's been a long morning. More big meetings that Godfrey loves to talk about. Big congressional meetings today, I believe.
I can tell by how excited you sound.
Yeah, it's going don't you great. Sound the enthusiasm in my voice for reporting about more minutia to a congressional bill? Isn't it great? I know.
Andy looks like if he had been hypothetically Andy's captured by like a third world country, but then brought on their news to tell everyone that they're okay and death to America. It's like Commandant Sankey is a kind and loving man.
He's treating me well.
The people in Birmingham are lovely. The American
infidels, the plantains in Tampa are delicious.
We shall leave the dirty NCAA and rule in a land of honey and gold. Long live the SEC. I am healthy. Tell my wife I love her. And then just transmission cuts.
That's exactly where we're at right now with Ross. Poor Ross. But here's the thing.
I'll recover.
We're going to start here where Ross and I are. We're going to start at SEC Media Days in Tampa because Ross asked some really interesting questions of Eli Drinkwitz, the Missouri coach, yesterday. And this something he said sort of took off, but I feel like it wasn't quite the spirit of what he said was not quite captured in the thing that took off. But there's a legitimate discussion to be had. And Ross, you asked Eli, basically, the Big Ten has won the last 3 national titles. You know, the SEC was very proud of how many national titles it had won prior to that. But what you asked Eli, what is something the Big Ten is doing? What are some of the decisions they've made that allow them to excel in this era of college football? And so what did he say when you asked that?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think we've all talked to Eli quite a bit, probably on the pod, and he might be the best interview in the SEC of coaches.
Oh, yeah. Agreed.
I think he always complains about me asking off the field questions, and yet then he goes on to answer them really, really well and thoughtfully, and sometimes a little aggressively, but we like that in the media often from him. So he did with this one. He said that he believes the SEC screwed up by playing a 9th game, right? And the Big Ten's reason for the one of the reasons they've been so dominant is that they don't play, they don't have a mandate to play a power conference, non-conference game on their schedule.
I choked a little bit.
That's one of the, and you can imagine what my phone looked like, and probably Andy's too, when we got out of that meeting and that got out. The Big Ten people, let's just say, had strong feelings on Eli's comments.
Well, it's interesting though, because I was thinking about it, because obviously Ohio State plays Texas this year. Michigan's going to play Oklahoma. Oregon's playing Oklahoma State. You know, it is not a mandate, but there are Big Ten teams that do this. But I will point out, so do you know how many autonomy four, power four, whatever we're going to call them these days, do you know how many non-conference games the 3 teams that won the national championship in the past 3 years, do you know how many non-conference games they played against power conference opponents?
It is 0. I'll go ahead and spoil it for you. Yes, it is buckshot.
There you go.
All right. I want us to do the responsible thing, okay? Which is to kind of explain to people how the context, it's not manipulated on purpose, but we kind of lose the context from the process of one coach talking to a group of y'all, and both of you were in this room when he said it, to then kind of what you see in the pull quote on Twitter and on Instagram, and you start getting
the exact
then I'm going to make
quote.
Fun of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I have the exact quote from Eli Drinkwitz. I went back and transcribed it. So here's what Eli Drinkwitz said in response to Ross's question. This is what has, you know, become the fodder.
Okay.
What I distinctly remember last year is being in the SEC meetings when we were discussing the 8-9 game scenario, and we were being told that if we didn't vote to go to a 9-game conference schedule, then the playoffs wouldn't expand, and so we made that decision. But in hindsight, we did not recognize, or I didn't recognize, that they didn't play an A4 game. That's the quote. Mm. And now I will push back on this a little bit because
it's, yeah,
maybe the coaches thought that the SEC was pushing for a ninth, because the SEC office was certainly pushing for a ninth conference game. It is something Greg Sankey wanted. But maybe the coaches thought that it was being pushed for as a way to get the playoff to expand to 16. That's not why they were expanding to nine conference games. They were expanding to nine conference games because members of the SEC for years, certain members, had been pushing for it because their schedules in the old divisional alignment were incredibly boring. Mm-hmm. They were having trouble selling tickets. And they wanted better schedules. Also, the SEC did not make a good enough TV deal relative to what the Big Ten did.
Yeah.
And they needed to find a way to get some more money.
Need some more money.
ESPN,
that's right.
Which had no,
$5 million
had no reason to give them any more money.
Yes. Yeah.
So they added the conference game. That's why they did it.
Yeah.
The answer is always money. Okay. Do we want to? Okay. Let's do the good part first so I can get in on making fun of Eli.
Okay.
He, I don't think, meant, well, help me here, Andy, because you just read the quote out, and it is, the premise is inherently a little dumb, and I'll get to that in a second.
He's basically saying we got bait and switched, I think is, okay. if you boil that down.
But then Eli is then telling the media later yesterday, like, I'm going to show everybody how we make sausage here. Eli gets mad, and it gets filtered through the media that he is mad at how he was represented for what he said. So let's explain that, because then there's this game of sort of like, it's not an apology back to him, but everyone needs to try and recontextualize. I am having a tough time because, Andy, when you read that, that is still kind of what most people think he said.
That is what he said. And okay. That's what he's complaining about. And if he's mad because people got mad at him for complaining about that, well, that's, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. That's his honest opinion. And
yes,
we on this show love when people give their honest opinions. We appreciate that. But there will be pushback on those opinions. Now, I've made fun of everybody for years about this. When the Big Ten people and the Big 12 people would complain that the SEC and the ACC only played 8 conference games, I would be like, you guys didn't have to go to 9. Nobody made you do that.
Right.
Why are you complaining about that? I will flip this back on the SEC now. You guys don't have to have that rule.
Yes.
You know, if Florida and Florida State want to play, and Clemson and South Carolina want to play, and Georgia and Georgia Tech want to play,
Kentucky
they can play.
And Louisville. Yeah.
You don't have to have that rule. I'm glad they do.
Yes.
I would prefer everybody just schedule good games. Like, here, we talked about the Big Ten teams that have won the national title. Indiana plays garbage non-conference schedules. They have ducked out of a series with Virginia. Like, if Indiana had had Virginia on the schedule last year, and Virginia was a very good team last year, Indiana would have killed Virginia.
Yes,
they still would have won the national title.
Yes.
So why are they ducking them?
Like, here's what I want to, let's pick this apart real fast. We're talking about 3 national champions. Okay, one was in the 4-team era, and Michigan won the Big Ten, so they would have made the playoff, and would have found fait accompli no matter what. So we're going to disregard the Michigan national championship for a second. Let's start last year when the SEC played these 9 conference games. According to Eli Drinkwitz's logic that he presented you guys yesterday, Indiana had some sort of advantage because to start their season, they played Old Dominion, bowl team, Kennesaw State, bowl team, and then an FCS in-state game against Indiana State that was so bad, it was 73-0, and they didn't pull most of their starters in that game. Granted, understood. Then they played through their conference championship game. So here's what Eli's telling us, I think, Andy, and you could tell me if I'm wrong. When Indiana goes to the Rose Bowl on January 1st and beats every inch of life out of Alabama with a 38-3 final score, somehow Alabama scheduling Florida State to start the season has a sort of downhill or cascade effect, and that somehow made the tide worse for wear against Indiana?
Well, you are leaving a very important part of this out. And look, I'm going to tell you what the SEC coaches think. You can choose whether you believe them or not.
All right.
I think they are somewhat correct in this. Their week-to-week schedule is harder in their conference. And so if you add a ninth conference game, if you add another conference game, their week-to-week schedule becomes even harder. Like the Big Ten at the top is better than the SEC right now.
Yes,
the Big
at the
Ten
top.
At the bottom is not better than the bottom of the SEC.
And not in the middle. Yeah. Andy, real
fast.
Not
in the middle either, right?
Ross, can you help me verify something real fast?
Sure.
Didn't all the SEC schools agree to bring in Texas and Oklahoma? Mm-hmm. Like, was that forced upon them?
One of them did not agree, but he was forced when they came out of the room. It was unanimous.
Right.
One of them over in Aggieland probably didn't appreciate it too much.
And then Andy, real fast, since you got the logo behind you, have they not marketed themselves as the most competitive conference in the
They very
the
much
best?
Have, and I believe they've made quite a bit of hay on that.
Yeah. So let's go back to that Rose Bowl for a second. Because Indiana played two G6 bowl teams and then Indiana State.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Kennesaw State was a conference champ, by the way. They won COSA.
Yes, they're a really good program last year. And then I want to go back again. So we have one in the middle. We have Ohio State, who had not yet started the Texas series. So the national championship season of 24, they don't have a marquee out-of-conference opponent. They still have the same Big Ten schedule. You know, they're beating teams like Oregon, et cetera. Okay. Well, they lost Oregon once, but they beat... This is what I want to get at. I'm looking because they played Tennessee, okay? Mm-hmm. Somehow beating Tennessee when Tennessee's out of conference slate that year. They played NC State in Mercedes-Benz.
Yep.
A number 24 ranked
in
NC
Charlotte.
State.
Yeah.
Or in Charlotte, sorry. Yeah, same thing. That is somehow to Tennessee's detriment in that game against Ohio State 3.5 months later. I'm confused, Eli. Can Eli come on the show and better explain?
Eli, I would love to have Eli on the show. He would be great.
I'm serious. I want to know more about this because somehow that has affected the SEC's ability to win titles.
The point is everybody's going to complain until everybody has to schedule the same way. And the Big Ten and the Big 12 complained when it was the SEC and the ACC doing something different. And now that the Big Ten is the one doing something different, everybody's complaining about them because the Big 12 guys were complaining about this too, by the way, because they have the same requirement in their league.
Right.
So that's pretty much it. I mean, you're going to get complaints until there is some sort of standardized scheduling, which will not happen unless there is a super league or unless the bill passes and they agree to do the pooling of rights, which they're not going to do.
Which Andy, I think yesterday that was one of the things we, talked to Eli about, I believe, is universal scheduling. I asked him about what would you think of a universal scheduling, and he kind of went off on that. I think a lot of people would love a power conference universal scheduling, but the TV networks, I believe, stand in the way.
I would love it too. I mean, I just want better games. Like, that's the thing. I don't care about the reasons for why you schedule in the non-conference games you schedule. I just want you to play good teams. And what bothers me is when you hear the people say who want the 2014 playoff, well, this will make it where they can schedule those games and feel comfortable scheduling those games. But they won't do it. Like, it expanded from 4 to 12, and they got more scared of them.
You know where I'm finding good games? In the 12-team playoff. And you know what else I'm finding?
Yeah.
The last four teams to compete for a national championship in the title game beat the brakes off of an SEC team to get there. The closest margin of victory was Miami closing out Ole Miss. Notre Dame beat Georgia. All right. Ohio State throttled Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Like, Indiana, one of the most embarrassing postseason moments for Alabama post Nick Saban by far. So I'm confused. I would maybe listen to Eli for a hot second if we weren't actually arriving at the referendum even before you get to the Final Four of the championship game. This is a problem, Andy, that you've already solved way back at the beginning of the segment. The top end is better in the Big Ten, and the SEC hasn't had to deal with that reality for the better part of 20 years.
Yeah.
The mewling and the whining about this makes their brand look worse.
But football coaches are going to whine when they perceive any iniquity. That's just what they do.
I would say perceive now, is the wrong word. They fabricated one because they're not. Get good is the answer. Especially Missouri. Well, why is Eli out here doing this?
Because well, Eli, last time Eli I has the last time, on the,
that's great. He the last time we heard opinions, from Eli yes. Drinkwitz, it, the last time Eli Drinkwitz was on the national radar, it's because he was the bridesmaid for about four other jobs to leave Missouri. So to come out here and stake this claim on behalf of the conference.
Yeah, I don't think he was the bridesmaid, by the way. He had options I'll push, and chose to stay, but he was not the bridesmaid.
I would push. Well, we can agree to disagree that there were jobs he chased that I think he would have absolutely left Columbia for that he didn't close on. How's that?
You think so? But
okay.
Here's the reality, boys. I want coaches to be honest with us and give us their opinions. I don't want to neuter their opinions. I don't want them to feel like if they say something spicy that we're just going to make fun of them. And it's fine to make fun of them about this if you want.
Yes.
It's a legitimate criticism of this. But my more legitimate criticism is that all of you need to play good non-conference games. Like, now they're playing Kansas, long-standing rivalry that died because Missouri went to the SEC. They're playing Kansas this year. They're playing Illinois next year, which is a Big Ten team that is scheduling an SEC team, by the way. Shout out Illini. And that's another, you know, border state situation where they should be playing pretty frequently. So let's just keep doing that. And I think they all should just schedule better games. Like, period. Mm. You're an entertainment product. Schedule good games. If you're scared you're going to get beat, be better.
Yes, get good. That's what we all agree on here. I just think it was a really weird position for Eli to take and to set off SEC Media Days. I think it's bad for the brand and that this is the first conversation we're having out of Tampa, I mean, which is the SEC making excuses again.
He happened to be going first. He's not going to be the only one.
Well, Andy, you talk about scheduling games. I think it coincided yesterday with, I think Brett McMurphy had the news of LSU dropping Arizona State from its schedule. You know, it just things like that. We've obviously seen a lot of that. You know, that's not great for the whole premise of making your schedule harder and challenging yourself. But, you know, here we are.
And I believe Texas has dropped an Arizona State series as well in the future. Now, Texas is still playing Ohio State, obviously.
Kenny's scaring everybody, huh?
I was saying, everybody's scaring Kenny Dillingham, for sure.
I mean, honestly, I wouldn't want to play Arizona State either, but...
Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't mind going to Tempe for a game. Sun Devil Stadium, that's a beautiful place.
Well, there's a lot of things there that are great. Yeah, it's true.
Consider Arizona State, America.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about something America is considering, or at least the duly elected representatives of the states that make up America. I don't think that was my best transition ever, but I'll take it.
It was good.
When we come back, Ross Dellinger has been burning up the phone lines between here and D.C. Where are they at on the old Protect College Sports Act? Could it come to the floor? I don't know about this week. Maybe next week? Let's talk about it when we come back. College Football Inquirer, and Ross Dellinger has been on the phone constantly because there are people in his hometown of D.C. that are trying to negotiate a version of the Protect College Sports Act that can pass the Senate, that can satisfy the SEC and the Big Ten while also still satisfying the other leagues and constituents. Ross, where are they at right now?
Yeah, they are, about 3 weeks ago or 2.5 weeks ago, maybe, revisions from the Republican side, from what I understand, were sent to the Democrat side, Maria Cantwell, possible revisions on the bill, most of them at the request of the SEC and Big Ten, right? Trying to, the whole goal here is to try to appease them and gain their support. And it's been a couple of weeks, and there's just been a lot of back and forth on what Cantwell and the Democrats are or are not going to agree to on some of these revisions. And so the latest one, and as we're talking about this, I believe there's a meeting between Mrs. Cantwell and Mr. Cruz this morning. And I don't necessarily expect anything groundbreaking from it, but I do expect one of the subject of conversations is what I wrote about from Media Days yesterday and what me and Eli Drinkwitz talked about because he talked about it with me. He had heard it as well. And that is a new pool of money to be spent on athletes. You have the regular rev share pool, and this is the introduction of a provision in the bill that would create a retention pool of $20 to $25 million is what I'm hearing. That would be spent, can only be spent on retaining your own players. So basically you'd have a rev share pool for high school and transfers.
It's a Larry Bird exception.
It is sort of like that, the Bird rights. Yeah. And you'd have the ability to spend that money. So it's basically, two, it's just a raising of the cap. You just did it in sort of a different way, but it's just increasing the cap. The cap basically increases to $45-ish million. Now, everybody is not on board with this. There's a lot of Group of Six programs that aren't real excited about it. There's some ACC and Big 12 programs that aren't real excited about it. But it does seem like it has some momentum, and it is a very big request specifically from the Big Ten, but SEC too, to gain their support.
So my question about the SEC and the Big Ten, because this is the one that still feels like a big time non-starter for me, Ross, is the anti-expansion clause, where basically, I know this has gone through several edits already. The initial like original language of it was, if you distribute over $1 billion a year, you cannot add more schools. And that is squarely at the SEC and the Big Ten. They rewrote it so that essentially you couldn't, the Big 12 and ACC also couldn't. And then the Group of Six schools are like, wait a second, we would like to move up. Where is that clause at right now?
Yeah, it has gone through a lot of edits and still is in the middle of editing. In so on Thursday, Thursday I was on the Capitol last Thursday all day and had learned there that the newest language to the expansion clause was a cap on conferences. At the time on Thursday, it was 20. Now we know it's more like 19, a cap on conferences of 19 members. Plus, if those schools who move, it's a kind of odd.
So Notre Dame can join the Big Ten. Clip that.
That's exactly what it is.
Clip that.
I think 100%. 100% it is. I think 100% it is. And so you have to apply it to everybody. So everybody has ability to reach 19 members. But the biggest thing, which I'd heard about over the weekend, but again, isn't concrete, so we'll see if it makes it through the final revisions, is that if you're a power conference program, like in the ACC, and you want to move within the power conferences to, say, the SEC, then you have to operate as an independent for 5 years. It's kind of like sitting out a year if you transfer as an athlete. This is an odd provision, to say the least. De-incentivizes. It definitely de-incentivizes any movement, which I'm sure was the goal. But let's just be real, and I'm sure I'm going to get some calls after saying this. I don't know why they're diving in to this issue. It's kind of bizarre to me that they are diving in so deeply into conference realignment weeds.
You know why?
I kind of do, but I'll let you say it.
The man paying for this effort. That's why.
Oh, like, guys. I wasn't thinking of that. Oh, I wasn't thinking necessarily of that. Well, I mean, I guess his motives may be what I was thinking of, which are they don't want the ACC to go the way the Pac-12 did.
Here's the problem. They screwed up initially by targeting the Big Ten and the SEC. That was the original sin of this thing. It's why I keep saying it's never going to pass, because they tried to pull an okie doke on the Big Ten and the SEC, and now they've been spending all these weeks trying to then reel that back in. They know you tried to pull an okie doke on them. They're not stupid. And as soon as that happened, it was clear what was going on here, that this was to favor certain types of schools that might happen to be in Lubbock, Texas, but that type of school. So Big 12 and ACC schools, they stood to gain the most from the original text of the bill.
Yes.
But that was never going to be agreed upon by the SEC and the Big Ten.
Yes.
Yeah.
The intent of this, the original intent by the people paying for this, America is a business. It's not a country, folks. The people who are pushing this through financially, what Andy's trying to say, I guess I'll just say it in a blunter way, will never have the leverage they think that they can achieve. And right. because you bit that bigger hand above you the first time, there's going to be sort of a terminal wariness of the actual established powers. The thing that every time Ross comes back and reports on a new development or a wrinkle, an addition or a committee, all I'm ever thinking of is, well, eventually when membership of the Big Two decide to split off and be done with this, I'm sure there's a way legally they can just sort of slide out the door. And so I hear like today, 19 teams. I'm thinking, well, if you leave your league and then reform something else, you should probably legally be able to do that. And that's what's going to happen. Yeah. I'm always thinking about how they're going to break this, if it even passes, which I don't think it will.
Yeah, I don't either. But let's say the FACACTA 5-year independence thing happened.
Yeah.
Guess what? All of those schools, Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, Georgia, LSU, could all agree to go independent, quote unquote,
yes.
for 5 years and schedule one another.
The Independent Association of Independent Schools that are only scheduling each other. And there's, don't know, maybe 28 of them. Like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then they have their independent playoff and an independent television deal. Like, yeah,
it's trying to fight gravity is what it
yes.
is. They're trying to fight gravity.
Yes, the semantics of this are hilarious. Unfortunately, I don't think we will ever achieve the fluidity needed to represent college football in its next evolution, which is promotion and relegation of some sort.
Yes.
What we're trying to do is all we're doing right now is the same thing we've always been doing, which is where are we going to place these walls? And the problem is because there's no flexibility. Look, I'll be honest, and I've taken a lot from Texas Tech fans on social for just pointing out what's happening. You guys are in a better place financially. You're more aggressive. You're better organized. You're doing that. Like, you deserve to be in the college football playoff when you are paying for that roster and that coaching staff and building those buildings, right?
I don't blame Texas Tech at all. They're doing what they should be doing.
Yes.
They're doing what everybody else should be doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there are schools that are going to wax and wane, and no one's ever going to introduce a solution that allows for that fluidity. And instead, we're so absurd, Ross, they've taken it now to the United States government to try and lock in some sort of status that could never really represent college football, but maybe for a couple years, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Right now, I think going on, like I said, there's a meeting today between the senators, and I think that we'll have, by the end of today and certainly by Wednesday, we'll have an idea if they're going to change enough stuff in the bill to appease the SEC and Big Ten. And I think right now the answer is probably, but we'll see. And it's just a very it feels like we're on an edge of a knife situation here, and one little slip, you'll cut yourself, and the bill will completely blow up, or we could have a deal.
Ross, they slit their wrists when they put the bill out. They slit their wrists when they decided to pull an okie doke on the SEC and the Big Ten. They really thought they could get away with that, and I just now it's sort of like on your first date you. You went and chatted up another girl in the middle of the date, and now you're trying to apologize for that. You can't come back from it.
Ross, I want to kind of further answer your question that you posed, which is why are they sticking their toe into this particular area of the water?
Yeah.
I do think if I could reduce both political parties very quickly, Republicans are craven, Democrats are dumb. There's a naivete on the Cantwell side on conference affiliation, and I do think it comes from a slightly pure place of trying to represent the constituency. We've talked about this before, but this is an individual representing probably the worst case scenario, which is that essentially she's standing up for two brands that will never appear at the same platform that they once held for the better part of 30 years in the Pac-10, Pac-12. So I think there's some sort of good faith to try and prevent that kind of effect, the Washington State effect, if you will, from happening again. The problem is, as Andy has pointed out many times, this is all a capitalist structure, and sometimes big-looking fish get eaten by bigger fish, and that's what happened to Wazoo, unfortunately. You can't prevent that. As much as I would love to, you can't prevent that.
I'm just imagining the fish. But yep. that's the right analogy. So, Ross, question. You mentioned last week that there was hope that maybe Thursday, also known in SEC Media Day circles as Lane Kiffin Day, that they might be able to get it on the floor. We'd heard yesterday, On3 had heard yesterday that maybe now they're looking a little more toward next week. What is realistic here?
Yeah, the timeline definitely, Cruz wanted, well, let's go back. I mentioned 2 weeks ago or 2.5 weeks ago, revisions were sent over from the Republican side to the Democrat side. I think there was a hope that within a week, those revisions would be ironed out. They weren't. Right. They're still so everything's sort of delayed. The SEC and Big Ten thought last Wednesday, so 6 days ago, they were getting revised text. They didn't get it. They still haven't gotten it as we're talking at 9:30 a.m. on Tuesday. And so this has just delayed everything and pushed it. Yeah. At least till next week, if not later. Next week, Lindsey Graham's funeral is Tuesday. In D.C., his funeral in South Carolina is Wednesday. That's going to be very difficult next week. Very, very difficult. So now you're looking at, you have one more week, the first week of August, to get something to the floor before the recess. As the days tick away, it's getting less optimistic. And if that doesn't happen, it's going to be hard, obviously. It's going to be really difficult. But the end goal still is getting the SEC and Big Ten on board. If that does happen, there is still, I think, hope at some point, even in the lame duck in December, that something might happen. But it's a tricky situation right now with timing.
Well, to quote the great 90s young country band Shenandoah,
there it is.
Your best bet is send 2 dozen roses. Send 2 dozen
Hell
roses
yeah.
the Big Ten and the SEC because – This is going to have to be a really big I'm sorry.
You worried about your transition in the first segment, and then you drop a Shenandoah lyric. You've totally redeemed yourself.
Hey, man, listen, Luke Combs just brought that song back, and he's a real one. He does it with Shenandoah. It's not like I'm covering this song. He's doing it with Shenandoah. They get a verse.
Shout out. So, I like Luke Combs. He taught America how to do a cookout order. Luke Combs, public service. Yeah.
Exactly. What's your tray? Gentlemen, one more thing to talk about. We got to put a bow on the Michigan AD situation. Ward Manuel is out at the end of the year. I want to spin this forward because this is something we talked about quite a bit last week, and Godfrey had some very strong opinions on it. What should the next AD be at Michigan? Where should they look? Mm. What type of person are we talking about? Talk about it when we come back. We are back to College Football Inquirer, and Monday, the news came out that we'd kind of been waiting for all of last week, that it almost felt like one of those, we're not going to give it to you because you expect it, and we're just going to wait another day or so. And Monday, Michigan puts out that Ward Manuel, the athletic director, will be stepping down at the end of the year. They didn't really reveal much from the investigation that they hired a law firm to do into the Sharon Moore situation, but did reveal that mistakes were made and could have been handled better, and they need to fix their reporting structure and a few other things. But the headline of that, guys, Ward Manuel is out despite his best attempts to fight back last week.
Shout out real fast, Andy, to that 4 or 5 days of total semantic nonsense. I know you guys who actually are charged with covering this. I know that can be frustrating where essentially we're just getting into a manhood measuring contest of everyone in the national and local media knowing that this is coming. And then them saying, well, nuh-uh. And essentially creating some sort of semantic nonsense so that it happens this week. Shout out to that. Andy, you asked me before the break, what should the next athletic director at Michigan look like? I would almost pose back to a question. When candidates emerge, I've been highly critical of Michigan. Feel completely justified in doing that. They've always represented themselves. Guys, remember the whole it's hard to beat the cheaters? Remember that? Jim Harbaugh's sort of paying to follow the rules, guys. Do you remember that? That we follow the rules at Michigan because that's what Michigan men do. So after a decade of not following the rules in everything from sexual harassment to on-field cheating and essentially sullying your brand, not beyond repair because everyone's a sycophant and they'll defend it until they're dead, you have become the thing that you tell us you're better than in college sports. You are squarely in the mud with the rest of us. So my question to y'all is, when the candidates emerge, is it possible to look at anyone within a Michigan affiliation, degree or, you know, prior experience in the athletic department, and think, man, this is not more of the same? Does that person exist? I'll kind of push it back to you.
I'm trying to think. There's not a lot of obvious candidates with Michigan. Because I'm just talking about if generic giant athletic department, you know, athletic director job opened.
Yeah.
Independent of school. Who would the names I would consider be, you know, what's the list? The names on that list, there aren't any that I can really think of that have big Michigan ties anyway. So that would not be my first thought. Now, here's the thing. And one of the reasons I asked this question, because one of the situations, we are very insulated in our little bubble of college sports. We know the people who work in the business. I think there's a group of people in the pro leagues, in the NFL and the NBA, who actually might be better suited to run college athletic departments in this era. And we don't know most of their names because these are usually people who are kind of, you know, not the president of the Miami Dolphins, but maybe this, you know, second in command. That's the sort of person you might be wanting to look at these days.
Yeah, I think you bring up a great point, which is that we're integrating now and we're treating these like pro sports franchises because they sort of are. And I think the field should be widened. But to your point, Andy, what I'm trying to get at, Ross, is that the next person probably should be hired solely on their merits and their ability to spin Michigan forward and nothing to do with alumni status.
Yeah, you would think. I think the history probably lends itself to trying something new outside. And you would think that they would do that. I mean, obviously it's really early in the search, so we don't really know. I mean, all we know is the interim president said he's going to do a national search. And by the way, they're in the middle of a president search too. Yes. So
I think that happens first.
Yes, that probably should happen the next couple months. And you would think the new president would have obviously a huge role in going forward and hiring the AD. You know, one of the most interesting things to me, guys, of the report in the situation is that the man who is blamed for a lot of this, who obviously got told he's fired, Ward Manuel,
right,
is going to stick around in a special advisor role to implement reforms being made to the athletic department that he once oversaw and was fired from.
I mean, it's the hot dog.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's absolutely
what are we doing? Trying to find the guy who did this. Yeah.
But I mean, the other thing from a news perspective, Ross, they still have all these pending lawsuits. Like, one of the reasons why, like at first I read the Jenner and Block sort of okie doke where we're not actually going to disclose anything and we're going to close ranks around the people who did all these things. That's very typical. We've seen that happen multiple times at major universities, but they kind of had to, the more I thought about it, because you have the Paige Shriver, right, is still suing the university.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're accusing Manuel specifically of basically obfuscating, blocking information, et cetera. But then isn't the Chris Partridge, isn't that also happening?
Yeah, that's
they have not settled
correct.
That.
They have not settled that.
So we have this idea of a clean break. Maybe we're being naive. Like there's still a lot of mess to clean up at Michigan just because they've said this guy's going to step down. By the way, it's not
He doesn't make it that far either, by the way. I would think as soon as the new president gets installed, one of the first orders of business is find a new athletic director, probably before the president even starts officially. So I bet that happens sooner rather than later. But, you know, and the other thing to point out, and Ross and I, we've talked about this on the show, this was all supposed to have happened and been done a while ago. They selected a new president. They hired Kent Severud from Syracuse. Unfortunately, he was diagnosed with brain cancer. And so they had to restart the presidential search process. They would already have a new AD. They would already have had all of this in place had that not happened.
I would like to maybe spin this in a more positive way. I've been highly critical of Michigan, but your brand status is so high and the potential there is so great with where you're positioned for the next era of college sports. I would just really strongly encourage you, go out and find the best candidate. Go out and find the best available player, right? This isn't a situation where you need to adhere to a structure, because your brand, even as sullied as it is right now on its own merits, when you talk numbers, Michigan is one of the biggest brands in college athletics.
Godfrey, I think you're right. I think this is a really good job for the right person, because one, Michigan has such juice, and also because they are willing to participate in the new era of college sports in a way that allows them to succeed. Like they've not had any qualms about it. Yeah. And they can help lead the way into whatever's next, because Michigan will be one of the biggest brands. They're going to be a factor. I think the one parting gift Ward Manuel will leave is Kyle Whittingham and a better football situation than they had before. They're probably going to be in the national title mix, I would say, for the next few years. And you know, they'll have a chance to really have a say in what happens next in all of this. So if you get that job, you have the potential to be one of the most important people in college sports.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. But I think, Andy, to kind of further your original point, I think the people who drive college sports from here on out are not going to come from the traditional circles we're used to. So I think it is someone with more of a corporate side experience, probably maybe a pro franchise, maybe from the league level, or, you know, another big one, honestly, is television executives as well. Like maybe it's someone from one of those partner brands at Fox or NBC. I'd be really curious to see how wide the net they cast will be. Obviously, we are not going to be privy to that, but, you know, it's, you hear things. That's our job. Our job is to hear things.
Well, I just think it's an opportunity for some. It's an opportunity for Michigan too. Like you guys said earlier, if they want to put this stuff behind them, one way to do it is just look for a completely fresh start with a bright mind who can lead you into the future. And don't put any limits on it. Don't say you need to have graduated from here or you need to have worked here before. And right. I think you just find the best candidate and let that person cook. And I think that they're in a really good spot. As bad as things have been, as many different little scandals as they've had and big scandals that they've had, and even the idea of you just win a basketball national championship and your coach takes off for the NBA, like, you're still in a great position because you have a football team capable of winning championships. You have a basketball program capable of winning national championships. You have what every other school would kill for. And so just cast a wide net, pick the best candidate, and it's probably going to keep on rolling, I would think.
Yeah.
Hey,
yes, in
the interest of therapy real fast, Michigan, you were so slow to acclimate to the Ohio State kind of status and like become competitive in our sport in football because you were so insistent on that Michigan culture. The only enemy here is yourself. We're telling you you're a top five brand. You really, the sky's the limit if you are willing to break out of these self-imposed rules. So
And they have been. I would argue that they've been willing to break out of those really since the dawn of NIL. That they've.
I mean, Kyle Whittingham is an inspired choice. Honestly, like I mean, I know that circumstance is incredibly bespoke, but Kyle Whittingham was looking. Actually, Andy, there you go. Do that. Look across. In a moment of stress, exercise your influence and your prowess as Michigan and take the best candidate available. I think that's what they did.
Yeah, I think you're right. And you know, if you do the same thing in your AD search, you could be in a really good spot. Gentlemen, this feels like a good spot to leave it. We will be back on Thursday. Ross may or may not still be here at SEC Media Days, depending on what goes on Capitol Hill. But that would be Lane Kiffin Day. It's going to be fun. But now I got Kirby Smart and Alex Golish walking around here. The Auburn folks got Auburn players behind me. This is going to be a fun. We're so close to actual games, so close to actual football. I can't wait. We'll talk to you on Thursday.